Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the controversy that other music talk shows won't touch.
When you dance the mambo, do you start on the one or the two? I'm John Schaefer, and today on Soundcheck, our series on dance crazes continues with the rise of Latin dance and the debate over the proper way to mambo. Plus, more tough questions when we look at the Macarena. And later... A few years ago, songwriter and record label staffer Santi White morphed into a hard-to-categorize pop juggernaut called Santigold. She joins us to talk about her new album, Master of My Make-Believe. All of that on Soundcheck after the news. And since you're listening to a podcast, you don't have to listen to the news. But before we actually get to the body of the show, I want to ask you a favor. Tell us what you think of the Soundcheck podcast. What do you like? What don't you like? Your opinion counts, and we want to keep making the best podcast we can. So send us an email, soundcheck@wnyc.org. All right, that's soundcheck@wnyc.org. And now, on with the show. You know what this song could use? Some clave, little Latin rhythm. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and today we learn to bailar el mambo as our Dance Craze series goes Latin. Plus, the unbelievable success of a little song called the Macarena. And singer-songwriter Santigold stopped by with her long-awaited second album, Master of My Make-Believe. But first, throughout the 20th century, there have been waves of loosely defined Latin dance crazes sweeping through New York City and the rest of the country. The rumba, the merengue, the cha-cha-cha, and, of course, the mambo. Joining me here in the studio is bandleader and percussionist Bobby Sanabria and dancer and choreographer Nydia Ocasio. Bobby, Nydia, welcome.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Let me ask you both. When we say mambo today, do we mean the same thing that people meant when they said mambo back in the 50s?
No.
Really?
Mambo really is a style of dance. I mean, and also a style of music as well, which Perez Prado, you know, Xavier Cugat Orchestra, you would hear that very, with the brass section and very jazzy and everything. But it was very, you know, upbeat, very fast. So actually the mambo, there is a style, and it's dance on the one, on the beat. But it's...
Oh, you're going to go right to that thing.
Right. No, well, actually, it's on the timing. So it's bop, ba-da-da, ba-da, ba-ba, ba-ba, ba. It was that fast. Mm-hmm. So, of course, all you could do is da, 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 da. And it looked a little bit like...
It looks a little bit like Bruce Springsteen, that step that Bruce Springsteen always does on stage. I swear, because I remember Nydia was giving a master class before a performance I was doing at
Lincoln
Center Out of Doors, and she gave a beautiful... In a very short amount of time, she covered like a lot of history of dancing, mambo, and how to dance on one and two. And she gave that whole background that she talks about the up-tempo, fiery Perez Prado style. And it was hilarious. I go, oh, man, Bruce Springsteen, he doesn't even know it. He's dancing mambo.
I want to come back to the dancing on one, dancing on two thing, because that seems to be a kind of a long brewing controversy in the mambo world. But you've both mentioned Perez Prado. Who was he?
Perez Prado, his real name, well, that was the name he used, his stage name, but his real name was Damaso Perez Prado. Fantastic pianist. In terms of style, for you listeners that are fans of jazz, he was like the Thelonious Monk of Cuban music. Very quirky, very jaggedy in his solo style, but he had very defined ideas about what he wanted to do using brass, and he wanted to write really in the upper register of the trumpets. So the orchestras that he worked with in Cuba kind of frowned upon him. His ideas were very far ahead of their time. But basically, mambo horn writing is different layers between the trombones, the saxophones, and the trumpets all intersecting at what you mentioned, the clave, which is this, the mantra of Cuban music. So you might have a layer like this. Mambo, 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 que mambo, mambo, mambo. Another layer. Mambo, 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 mambo. Another layer. Mambo, 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 mambo.
So that,
mambo, and then all intersecting.
That clave is going under all of that.
And that's percolating. The percussion has to adhere to that, the piano, everything. But when it all comes together, you get this wall of sound that just envelops you on the dance floor and makes you go into ecstasy.
And turned out to be hugely successful in this country in 1955 when that very same Perez Prado hit number one on the Billboard chart for 10 weeks with this song, Cherry Pink and Apple Blossom White. Hugely successful hit song for Perez Prado. Cherry Pink and Apple Blossom White, number one in the spring of 1955 here in the States. And the mambo craze was in full swing. And in our week-long series looking at dance crazes, we are talking about the mambo and the various waves of Latin dance that came through the States. Bobby Sanabria, the Grammy-nominated percussionist, bandleader, and composer. His latest album is called Tito Puente, Masterworks Live. Nydia Ocasio is a salsa and Afro-Cuban dancer, choreographer, and instructor. Nydia, Bobby did a good job of explaining the music, you know, the different layers of horns and that clave rhythm underneath the whole thing. Mm-hmm. Where does the mambo dance come from?
Cuba. Mm-hmm. Cuba.
And
cha-cha-cha,
is it built?
Cuba.
Right. And does it come from, like, the rumba? Or
it's, you know, when I saw, I mean, I had gone on an educational tour to Cuba back in 2003. And even though, way before I even went there, I was already working with Cubans here, all various styles of their salsa. And they explain, they break down the different, what is mambo, how it's traditionally danced. Of course, cha-cha-cha, all of that is old news to me because we've been doing it here. But when you're learning with them, you see that what we were accustomed saying, oh, mambo, and we were dancing on the offbeat, which people call here dancing on too, we were not dancing mambo. We were dancing son montuno. So the mambo.
An older form,
which comes from the danzón. And it's on the clave beat. It's on the clave, but it's the conga rhythm pattern that is very common here, and it's played repeatedly. Is where the clave resides quietly when you don't hear the clave rhythm.
That's Bobby. Probably worth pointing out is that sometimes we talk about the clave. It's always in the music, but there may not be somebody physically playing that.
Those two sticks that are the engine
sticks.
That drives
the
music.
Sticks, yeah.
Talking about son montuno, we have to talk about one person, Arsenio Rodriguez. Who it's his 100th birthday this year. And Arsenio holds the same position in Cuban music that Louis Armstrong holds in jazz. Mm-hmm. He was transformative. Without Arsenio, you don't get mambo because he started the multiple layering with the trumpets. Mambo is a Bantu Congolese word. It's a West African word. It means a chant or a song that repeats over and over to communicate with the gods. Mm-hmm. So that's what you're doing on the dance floor. So despite the superficial commerciality of the music, the way it started getting mega popular in the 50s and what you might see on Dancing with the Stars, there is some deep spirituality
right.
to it. In terms of the
and
way we played in New York.
As with all things spiritual, lots of people arguing over the proper way to practice that spirituality.
Well, when you're talking about dancing on two, It's a little bit more sophisticated than Dancing on One, simply because that older style, Son Montuno, was sophisticated and was urban. But
the when we see Ralph Cramden and, you know, the rest of the Honeymooners gang dancing the Mambo, they're dancing to Tito Rodriguez. They're dancing to one of the Mambo Kings. Are they dancing on the one or on the two?
I didn't see that clearly.
haven't seen that?
Ralph is
doing a parody of what Mambo is. So it's the thing I must say about the way we took Cuban music in New York, Puerto Rican musicians and African-American musicians and Cuban musicians, everything that would come from Cuba, we hippified in one way or another. And we're talking about the music, Tito Puente, Machito, mm-hmm. Tito Rodriguez, super jazz-oriented, very highly sophisticated, mm-hmm. and the music and the dancers followed in that realm. Also, the early mambo dancers here were Lindy Hoppers. Mm. So they incorporated the gymnastic types of moves, the style, the panache into mambo. So it's a beautiful thing the way we dance here
and
in New York.
And what I wanted to say about that's when you see people dancing mambo, I mean traditional, the authenticity of the mambo, it looks a lot like Lindy Hop because mm-hmm. they do it. I saw this choreography when I was out there where they're tapping on their little toes and they're just coming up with a little jump in their body, which looked a little bit like Boogaloo too.
Then
it's shifting the foot from one side and crossing and then kicking. I said, wow, that looks like Lindy Hop or,
right.
you know, swing.
Right.
That's what it looked like, swing.
Which we covered in our series on Tuesday. If you missed it, check our audio archives at wnyc.org/soundcheck. All right, so you guys have gotten us to the period where I think it's appropriate to talk about the Mambo Kings. You've already, Bobby, mentioned Tito Puente, Machito, Tito Rodriguez.
The Holy Trinity.
Where would you go to worship this Holy Trinity?
Well, on West 53rd Street and Broadway, the Palladium Ballroom, which lasted from 1948 till 1966. A retired Jewish tailor that had gone to Cuba, Maxwell Hyman, opened this great place, and it was our mecca for all those years. Parenthetically, one block away from the home of progressive jazz, Birdland. So it was very common to see Charlie Parker, Dizzy Gillespie, and any number of musicians, Max Roach, go to the Palladium on their breaks, check out what was happening, sit in, and the Latino musicians would reciprocate. So it was a great time period. I don't know if it exists again, but music still exists. We're here talking about it, so that means it's still alive.
and here are some clips from the Mambo Kings, beginning with Tito Puente and Mambo Con Puente.
Qué bueno está mi mambo.
Para bailar,
mambo, 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 mambo de la mambo Landia.
Tito Puente and his Mambo Con Puente. Another of the so-called Mambo Kings was Machito with his group the Afro-Cubans and Mambo Jumbo. Machito and his Afro-Cubans, they had a lot of good results with that song, Mambo Jumbo. And the third of the three Mambo Kings, Tito Rodriguez and his orchestra with El Mambo Hop. Tito Rodriguez and his orchestra, El Mambo Hop. And I want to first of all say that that famous Honeymooners episode I alluded to before, they do dance to Tito Rodriguez in that episode. Nydia, you mentioned how a lot of classic mambo dancing sort of draws on the swing dancing, the Lindy Hop. This is El Mambo Hop.
There you go.
Kind of proves your point.
Yes, absolutely.
And so what do you, what are you listening to when you're dancing? I mean, there's all this talk whether you dance on the one, dance on the two. How are you?
Well, the beauty of my experience in dancing was that we just danced very naturally. And I think really, I always say that my dance studio was always the clubs. And my instructors were the musicians. And I think that was the difference now than then is that we had the exposure of being exposed to live Latin bands, that this give and take, this feedback that we were feeling from the band allowed us to dance very expressively on the dance floor. So a lot of that emotion, because that's what it was, this emotion. So typically, I mean, when, you know, we didn't think of, oh, are we dancing one, two? It just didn't exist. What allowed us to be guided by the musician was the cowbell. And the cowbell was always going, ding, ding, tuku, ding, tuku, ding. And guess what? That's on the one beat. Mm-hmm. So we just naturally swayed side to side. And then it's, okay, now we got to move around. So we started moving around. But we were moving around on that simple rhythm. Mm-hmm. Then I know somewhere between, I would say from the late 60s, early 70s, somebody said, hey, you know, they're doing this dance. It's called the Palladium Style Mambo. And I said, Palladium Style Mambo. And then I realized that there was this slow and quick, slow movement. Did I know what timing? I just went right along with them, followed it. But when I got more and more involved with it, where I started to now train or perform and rehearse with different Afro-Cuban musicians and dancers, I started to realize that offbeat fell where the conga rhythm fell, which is where the song and son montuno is always
This is on the two.
Offbeat. And which is why I prefer referring it to that. When you're hearing it now, when people say on two, to me, I think what happened is they try to attempt to do what we were doing, but they weren't getting it right, because even though they were teaching on their on two, but the body was still moving on the one.
Yeah.
So it's
a kind of a natural thing. You know, we want to be on, we want to hit that beat.
Yeah,
we want to hear that hard
but it's,
one.
But it's even with the dancing on the off beat, there is a body, the body moves differently than it moves on the one.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking with the dancer and choreographer Nydia Ocasio and with Bobby Sanabria, the Grammy-nominated percussionist, band leader, and composer. He'll actually be performing Saturday with the Multiverse Big Band at the Players Club here in Manhattan, and on Monday night at Joe's Pub with the New School Afro-Cuban Jazz Orchestra. And Bobby, where did you first start seeing, mambo dancers? I mean, is it just like wherever the musicians are, the dancers are like immediately there? Do they just go hand in hand?
It starts in the home. I mean, the music was played in the home. Many of us, Nydia included, she's from Brooklyn. I'm from the South Bronx. She's from South Brooklyn. Our parents are Puerto Ricans, and we had house parties. Mm-hmm. I learned the first dance step I ever took was on my grandmother's feet. She was visiting my mother's father. My father's mother came to visit us, and we were having a house party. And I'm just sitting there. I think I'm 4 years older when I'm just watching. She comes over in Spanish. What are you doing here, sitting here down? I go, why don't you dance? And I just shrug my shoulders. Come over here. She puts she puts my feet on her feet, and all of a sudden we're dancing. We're moving. So and also, I must say, the music was very vibrant in the 70s in New York City. The whole salsa explosion. You heard conga drums in the summertime all the time in wherever there was Hispanic neighborhoods in New York.
You also had the height of salsa. You had the Fania All-Stars
exactly,
all of that.
Exactly, yeah.
And so when people say salsa nowadays, are they talking about basically the same dance, the mambo dance?
Actually, it's salsa means sauce.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's a condiments of all this beautiful music coming together. And normally when we say, oh, let's go dance that salsa, we're referring to the Latin music that we're listening to. It's not where people sometimes try to say, oh, when you dance on one, you're dancing salsa. When you dance on two, you're dancing mambo. No. The word salsa just means sauce. I remember Tito Puente said that. It just means sauce. It's a condiments of, of those beautiful music, that beautiful music coming together.
If you want to get more sophisticated, obviously there are certain styles like guaracha, mambo, son montuno, danzón, cha-cha-cha, mm-hmm. which we didn't touch upon, but the cha-cha-cha
well,
is one of the
hippest
dances.
Well, we've actually got one of your cha-cha-chas to wrap up with.
Oh, okay,
today.
Great.
The Alegre cha-cha-cha from Bobby's album Tito Puente Masterworks Live. We've been talking about mambo, the Latin dance craze that swept the country in the 50s and really never went away. And whether it's on the one or on the two, whether you call it mambo or salsa, it seems to be here to stay. Nydia Ocasio, Bobby Sanabria, thank you both for being with us on Soundtrack.
Thanks for the opportunity to share this music with everyone. Thank you.
Up next, we fast forward to the 90s mega hit that just wouldn't stop, the Macarena. And then later, we talk with the songwriter and producer Santi Gold about her new album, the long-awaited Master of My Make-Believe. This is Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Oh, you knew this was coming. You had to know this was coming. We can't do a series on dance crazes and not mention the Macarena. In 1996, the Macarena was the queen of the dance floor and the charts. It held the number one spot on Billboard's Hot 100 for 14 weeks that year. And before that, it had spent 33 weeks steadily clawing its way to the top. Joining me now on the line to talk about this phenomenon is Melinda Russell, professor of music at Carleton College in Minnesota. Melinda, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thanks, John.
You know, we were talking about mambo and Latin dance a moment ago. The Macarena is commonly thought of as a Latin dance, but that's not entirely true, is it?
It's sort of complicated. It's written by these two guys from Seville and then remixed by a variety of people, including the Bayside Boys, and was important in a bunch of Latin contexts. So it's tricky.
Yeah, but it's a European. It's from Spain originally.
Right. That's right.
And it comes with this dance, this kind of line dance thing with the hands out and the hands over and the hands on the shoulders and all that. Does anybody know where that dance comes from?
You know, I've not even heard a theory about where and it's hard to even call them steps, because one of the unique things about it is that it really has no steps. I've never heard a theory about where that originated.
Now, there are, you know, several versions of the song, but really only one version of the dance, right?
As far as I know, although, you know, one of the things that happened as the craze proceeded is that the Macarena broke so many rules of dance in being so simple and inclusive that people started to apply more regular rules of dance to it and come up with more complicated steps or double time Macarenas, but it's basically one dance.
And can you sort of describe it for, there must be somebody out there who doesn't know the Macarena.
It essentially is a bunch of arm movements with right-left side alternation, and you don't touch a partner, you touch yourself through the whole dance. And at the very end, there's a sort of, for most people, modest hip shake, and then you do a quarter turn and you start the whole thing all over again.
So it's the hokey pokey.
It is, and it, you know, one of the things that's remarkable about it is it takes about 9 seconds to do a cycle, so you get a chance over and over again to cement your memorization of it and to get it right.
Now, why were so many millions of Americans working in 9-second increments to get it right?
Gosh, I mean, I think there, for one thing, it was fun. It's hard to deny it was fun. It's hard to get at the kind of spirit that pervaded it, I don't think you can overemphasize how much this thing was everywhere. I mean, there were radio stations playing it for hours at a time. People did it in their cars, in nursing homes, in classrooms. And I think part of what Americans liked about it in particular was that it was so inclusive, in contrast to a lot of dance that we have.
So when we began this series on dance crazes earlier this week, we began with the twist. And, of course, one of the great things about the twist, the reason for its popularity, was it was so easy anybody could do it.
Exactly.
And is that, so you're saying a similar thing was at work with the Macarena?
Yeah, I think even more so. It's just, it was crazily simple. And even more than the twist, I heard Sally Summer talking about how multi-generational that was.
Right.
And that's absolutely true with the Macarena. I think even more so because one thing that was really unusual about it is it was taught almost everywhere it was danced.
Mm-hmm.
So as likely as not, somebody got up and showed you the steps. If not, there were handouts frequently showing the steps or videos. And so it was really impossible not to learn.
And as a line dance, I guess, I mean, unlike the twist where, you know, even if you were sort of dancing en masse, you more or less had a partner at least for a few seconds, this was like a ton of different, you know, a ton of different ways of doing this. And the more the merrier, right? So it became like a competition. Who can have the most Macarena dancers?
That's exactly right. So, I mean, unlike some of the crazes you're discussing, I think that element of inclusion was prized way more than excellence in dancing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like Happy Birthday, where it was just rude not to join in. And it was, I mean, I'm not a dancer at all myself, I must say. And it was hard to be in dance context with a Macarena if you didn't want to dance, because people really would pick you up. And all of the usual excuses, I don't know how to dance, I don't dance, just didn't work because its simplicity defied them.
Mm-hmm. And was it, I mean, you know, it sort of came out of left field. It hit really big. The song eventually fell off the charts, but, you know, it's become like a wedding thing. I mean, was it a fad or was, I mean, it seems to have had some staying power.
Yeah, I mean, I think where it has staying power are exactly those settings where it still matters to get everybody together.
Mm-hmm.
So bar mitzvahs, weddings, where you really need to do something to make it intergenerational and make it inclusive.
Right. Now, not everybody wants to be included. And so there were, this was the early days of the internet, but there were websites for haters as far back as the 90s.
That's right. That's one of my favorite things about it. The Sacramento Bee had a website called the Macarena Free Zone, and there were numerous websites whose names I can't repeat. You know, basically directed at becoming a dumping ground for people to share their horror stories about either having to dance it or having to watch people dance it. You know, it was derided because it was so simple. It was derided because it was so inclusive. And one of the things that people really took on was this idea that people who ought to sit down were dancing. So a lot of those stories were, you know, my grandmother's dancing, my dad's dancing. It's just awful.
It's embarrassing.
Exactly.
To be reminded that you have parents and that they can actually move.
And that they're moving, exactly. And you saw it even in the news coverage. You'd have, I remember Bill Hemmer and CNN, and there were a couple other sort of staid newscasters who were evidently forced to do interviews on this subject and just basically endured them and denied any connection with the Macarena.
Well, the Macarena had a strong hold of the country back in the 90s, and we started with the Bayside Boys remix, which was the big hit, but in the background is the original version from this Spanish duo, Los del Rio. We've been speaking with Melinda Russell. She's professor of music at Carleton College in Minnesota. And Melinda, thanks for being with us on Soundcheck today.
My pleasure, John.
This is Soundcheck. Up next, singer, songwriter, producer Santi Gold joins us to talk about her new album, Master of My Make-Believe. That's next on Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. 4 years ago, the songwriter and producer Santi White released a debut album called Santa Gold. It blended reggae, new wave, club sounds. Critical acclaim came next. And then, collaboration with the Beastie Boys, a tour with Björk, assigning to Jay-Z's record label. And now, 4 years later, Santa Gold is back. Her new album is called Master of My Make-Believe. Santi joins me here in the Soundcheck Studios.
Hello.
Good to see you.
You too.
So 4 years ago, we were opening the green space, and there you were, you and Lou Reed, our first guests.
I know,
downstairs.
That was exciting.
A lot has changed since then, in the pop landscape especially.
Yes.
I mean, do you sort of feel like Rip Van Winkle after 4 years coming back? I mean, of course, you've been out there, but, you know,
well,
making records.
Making a record, 2 years I was out there because I was on the road. So I toured all of 2008, 2009. But then it is, when you go to work on your record, it's like you're going into a cave. You know, it's kind of like Encino Man when you come out. but it's, I'm really happy to be back out. I was working really hard on the record.
Yeah.
And
Just to say, the first album was called Santa Gold, S-A-N-T-O.
Mm-hmm.
But there was
some legal
falderal with,
yeah,
you know, and now it's Santi, S-A-N-T-I, Santa Gold.
Santa Gold, yeah.
It's a different country 4 years later as well, you know?
Definitely.
I mean, from you know, where we were in 2008 to where we are now. And that seems to be at play in at least some of the new songs on the record. There's a song called The Keepers, for example.
Yes.
Which sounds alarmingly like a wake-up call. Is that how you meant
exactly
it?
Exactly, a wake-up call. It says, "We're the keepers. While we sleep in America, our house is burning down." It's a pretty bold statement.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds very happy, though, as you sing along. It's like happy, but then you're like, wait a second.
But there's, you know, there's a long tradition of great pop music that does exactly that.
Well, yeah. I mean, I love a pop melody. I love a hook that gets in your head, and all the better if it gets in your head and it has a message.
This song is called The Keepers. It's from the new Santa Gold record called Master of My Make-Believe.
I walk blind with smoke in my eyes, like we don't know where we've been. That's it, boy. Just state your case. You're just as wrong as you were then. What's up, move though, your hands up. Say I don't make no rules. No one even knows I'm here. Now it's on you to man up. You say no way to hang on what you say. We're the keepers. While we sleep in America, our house is burning down. Our house is burning. We're the keepers. While we sleep in America, our house is burning down. Our house is burning down. Down, burns down. Our house is burning down. Ask me
That is my guest, Santi Gold, from her new album, Master of My Make-Believe, which is out now, and a song called The Keepers. Santi Gold is performing at MoMA, the Museum of Modern Art, at their annual Party in the Garden later this month, May 22nd. She's here with us on Soundcheck today. 4 years is a long time between, you know, drinks of water in this particular musical world. So, you know, what was going on there? A little writer's block at some point?
Well, basically, I was on the road 2008, 2009, and I started in 2010. And honestly, I was almost done by the end of 2010. But then my label situation was like, which label's putting out my record? So I went on tour for a little while they figured it out. I added about three more songs, and when I came back, they were done. I was upstream to Atlantic, and It was time for setup,
mm-hmm,
which takes another 6 months. So, I mean, there was a little bit of writer's block, but I don't think it was anything crazy. It was like about a month or month and a half where I was struggling with lyrics. Melody was fine.
Right.
But I guess it was so much going on. I'd been on the road for 2 years. And I as soon as I finished touring, I went and climbed Kilimanjaro. And like, literally, I mean,
wow.
We were trying to raise awareness for the clean water crisis. Mm-hmm. And a couple of us went over to Ethiopia, visited a UN refugee camp, and I literally flew straight from Ethiopia to LA, straight into the studio to start my record. So there was not a moment to just process life,
yeah,
and, you know, what I thought and where I was. And so that was what I called a writer's block, but really it was just, like, I just needed to be patient and, like, take a second to just process and figure out what it was I was trying to say.
Yeah. I mean, we've actually done, you know, shows in the past on writer's block and how common it is, but the very different and very personal ways that people get past it.
Right.
So what was it for you? How did you, was it just like taking time?
Well, I started doing transcendental meditation, honestly. And that was the best thing because I think really the main thing that causes writer's block is anxiety and pressure that you put on yourself, you know? So meditation just gets rid of that right away. It was just like calm, confidence, and more importantly, it taps you right into the source, which is where your creativity comes from. It's just your dreams even become more vivid. And I get so many ideas like on my way into or out of sleep. Like that's, I just know to pay attention, you know, as I'm going to sleep or waking up. And meditation is just, it makes everything more vivid. It's just, you know, it's just, you and, just have a complete sense of confidence.
And transcendental TM, this is the stuff that the Beatles were doing back in the
60s. Yes.
So it's been around, well, it's been around for a while. It's been around for thousands of years.
Now, the woman who taught me how to do it, she was there with the Beatles. Her name's Nancy Cook de Herrera, and she wrote a book called All You Need Is Love. And it was about the experience because she was one of the main people who helped, you know, Maharishi bring his message to the West, and it was all about that. But she's like 90 years old now, and that's who she taught me how to do it. It was awesome.
All right. We're speaking with Santi Gold. Her new album's called Master of My Make-Believe. I have to mention the cover, and you can see the cover art on the Soundcheck webpage, wnyc.org/soundcheck. It features you in three different settings. So, you know, if you're playing with identity in the lyrics of the songs, you're playing with it big time right here on the cover of the record.
Yeah.
There's you as this kind of Napoleonic figure in a painting by Kehinde Wiley, great painter who has this kind of odd blend of hip-hop and sort of Baroque Rococo art.
Yeah, he's amazing.
And but so there's you up on the wall in this Kehinde Wiley painting, and there's also you dressed as a man on a throne in front of the painting, flanked by two more of you as a kind of like warrior goddess
sort
of
guards,
thing.
His lady guards.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, is that all about, is that about make-believe? Is that a dream? Is that?
Yeah, it's Master of My Make-Believe is the name of the record. And it's all about being the ruler of your reality and daring to dream something different for yourself and then knowing you have the power to make that a reality. And so I decided, well, first of all, I wanted to do a collaboration with a visual artist because there's so many iconic pieces of artwork that have come out of musician, visual artist collaborations from, you know, Andy Warhol and Velvet Underground to Basquiat and Rahm El Zee or Grace Jones and Keith Haring. And I just was like, this doesn't happen anymore and I want to do it. So I reached out to Kehinde Wiley because he's one of my favorites of our time. And he was like, yeah, I'll paint you, you know. And it was I was the first woman he ever painted also, which was a big deal.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You know, now that you mention it, I guess that's right.
Yeah.
Because for folks who haven't seen Kehinde, you can find him online. You know, he'll get these guys dressed in, like, you know, typical hip-hop regalia, you know, the Houston Astros jersey, whatever, the L.A. Lakers cap. But then they're, like,
on horses
and holding a lance. And
exactly. He's got a show on May 5th in New York, actually.
Well, you can see the cover art from Santi Gold's record on our webpage, as I say, wnyc.org/soundcheck. So God from the Machine, literal translation of the old Deus Ex Machina.
Yes.
What's going on here?
Well, that was a song that was pretty much a pep talk to myself, you know, and I guess in writing, when the author inserts his or herself into the story, it's Deus Ex Machina. And I got the idea from a Kurt Vonnegut book, actually, where he, like, I think it was Breakfast of Champions, and the character's sitting in a bar, and he feels this man staring at him, and it's Kurt Vonnegut, and he's like, you're afraid you're going to end up like your mother, or something like that. And I was just like, I wrote this song, and when I write, I just sing whatever, scratch lyrics, and then I go back and I write the real lyrics, and the first thing out of my mouth was like, you can make it alone if you try. And I tried for 3 months to change the lyric, and I was like, nothing else was right. And I was like, that's because this is exactly what I need to hear right now. You know, I was just really struggling. Sometimes when you're in the middle of your project and you feel like nobody else understands your vision, nobody's giving you the help that you need. And it's really, I mean, everything's DIY nowadays. You have to do everything yourself. And sometimes you got to make something out of nothing. And it's just like, I needed a pep talk and I wrote myself one.
And it took you a couple of months to realize it, I guess.
Yeah, it did. There's, you know.
The song is called God from the Machine from the new Santi Gold record.
Don't let
That is Santa Gold. God from the Machine is a song from her new record, Master of My Make-Believe. And she's performing May 22nd at MoMA, the Museum of Modern Art, their annual party in the garden, and June 23rd at the Governor's Ball, part of the two-day event at Governor's Island here in New York. She's with me on Soundcheck. 4 years after opening the Green Space, where we've continued to do events over the years. Back with her second album called Master of My Make-Believe. And Santi, you were saying, you know, how you have to do everything yourself. There's a bunch of, like, really great producers helping you out on this record. Diplo and Switch and Dave Sitek from TV on the Radio. Nick Zimmer from the AAS. So it seems like there was...
Yeah, I didn't do all of it by myself.
Yeah. I mean...
No, they were all so wonderful. I worked with a lot of different producers on my record, and each of them are seriously, I think, some of the most amazing producers out there, and a pleasure to work with for the most part. But
says the executive producer.
Yeah, tried chasing down files, and then you changed that statement completely. But yeah, the way that I make my music is kind of a collage process. You know, I work with sometimes up to three producers on a track,
But I just want to point out, you are careful to share writing credit with all those people too.
Of course, which is all. It's actually difficult too, because I'm the only. See, I call myself the glue. You know, I only work with each producer. I mean, I didn't work with anybody for more than a month, yet I worked on my record for a year and a half. So it's up to me to then take everything and put it together and sort out everything and, you know, get everything into the same program, because nowadays everyone, I work on Logic, Pro Tools, Ableton, you know. But then at the end of the day, I'm arguing on everybody's behalf, because with all the different producers, it's like, they're like, well, I did this. And I'm like, yeah, but he did this too. And you know what I mean? So it's kind of a challenge.
Yeah. And, you know, to sort of let that initial voice, that voice that's giving you the pep talk in God, from the Machine, for example, or in a song like The Riot's Gone, I mean, you can strip away all the production, and, you know, it seems like whatever the beating heart of that song initially was is still there on this track.
Yeah, that's actually a track that was different from any track I've ever written before, and it's probably because it was right when I got to Jamaica, and it was the first moment, really, on working on this record where I got to just step outside of all the things going on outside and just go someplace quiet and focus on the noise inside of my head.
Jamaica's quiet?
Actually, Port Antonio at GJM is the most quiet place ever. It's not one of those places, I went to Jamaica to experience the culture, and it's like I went to get away. It's like 5 minutes from the Blue Lagoon. It's facing the ocean. It's just a beautiful, beautiful place. And it's got this wonderful little studio there. And I discovered it a couple trips back, and I was like, this is where I need to record. Mm. But I sat at the piano. I don't even barely play piano, but I play enough to write a couple chords, you know. And I just sang the song and literally had my laptop recording on the top. And so I wrote the song to piano, which is like, and it's kind of a ballad for me, mm-hmm. you know. So it's a special song in that way. And then I took these drums that Switch and I had worked on for something and put it right over and it fit perfectly. And I was like, this is weird. And I walked in the studio. I was like, you want to hear it? Kind of like embarrassed. Like, you want to hear what I just did? And Switch was like, oh, my God.
So it sounds like it was meant to be.
Yeah, it was good.
The song is called The Riot's Gone. It's from my guest, Santi Gold, from her new album, Master of My Make-Believe.
I've been looking for a fight. All the trouble that I know, trying to lose the world inside, but it's got no place to go. Oh, I'm on dangerous at the whim of my command. I've been
Riot's Gone, name of a song from Santa Gold's new album, Master of My Make-Believe, her long-awaited second album. It's out now, and Santa Gold's with me in the Soundcheck studio, and that's a song written in Jamaica at the piano, both of which make this kind of a standout track in terms of the writing process. You mentioned the way you normally work, Santi, is sort of a collage. You have in your background a lot of work sort of within the industry writing, you know, pop songs mm-hmm. for other people like Ashley Simpson and Christina Aguilera and stuff. Mm-hmm. Is that how you wrote for them as well?
Oh, no. It's a completely different process. And honestly, I like putting myself in positions to write for other people like that. I don't do it very often, but when I do, it's a challenge for me, mm-hmm. especially nowadays as mainstream pop becomes more and more narrow and formulaic. It's actually not as much fun now, but it does force you to write within a certain rigid structure that is pop music, which I enjoy because for me, when I bring it back to my own music, I lay down the structure and then I just do everything I can to like push against the structure while keeping the structure. And I think it makes for some really exciting music, but that stays in the pop realm, at least in my opinion, I think mm-hmm. it does. Mm-hmm. But when you write for other people, you know, you're really writing for someone else. And so you have to kind of put yourself in their shoes. You don't want to write your music for someone else. So I try to write something that's going to, and usually I write with the artist mm-hmm. too. So it comes out different.
So are you still doing that or
not
so much?
Not so much right now. No, I've really been focused on trying to get this record out.
Yeah. Although you have done some really interesting collaborations. I love the new Amadou and Mariam album, the so-called Blind Couple of Mali.
I love them.
And
so
and you guys you collaborated with them on like the opening track of the record.
Yeah, we did a song, and Nick Zinner also worked on mm-hmm. the song. We were so excited because Nick and I are such big fans, and I think I called him. I was like, "Did they call you?" And he's like, "Yeah." I was like, "Oh my god!" And we went in, and it was just like us in this tiny little hotel room, and they're sitting on the bed playing guitar, and me and Nick are like in the corner, like shy. But the song came out so great. I love their music. In general,
mm-hmm. Not only are they a couple of, I mean, they're a couple personally and uh-huh. also musically, but they're, you know, they also come out of this like deeply rooted wellspring of music that most American pop, if you trace it back far enough, comes from. Did you kind of get the feeling you were working with like?
Oh yeah, it was. They're so it's effortless. It's so easy for them. It's so organic, natural, and they're just totally at ease. And they write in such a traditional way. It's like he plays guitar. She just sings out her ideas. And they were like waiting for me to chime in. And I'm sitting there like, I got my laptop. And I'm like, can I just record some ideas? And then
Now, during this 4-year period, you signed with Jay-Z's Roc Nation.
For management.
For management. What does that, you know, does that sort of boost you into the next layer of fame? You see where I'm going with this. It's the song Fame, which is all.
Oh, I didn't even see that.
yes, Santi. You have a song called Fame on your new record.
You're right, yes.
Which seems to be, I mean, you know, as you get closer to that kind of world, mm-hmm. you know, how ambivalent are your feelings about it?
Well, I mean, I think celebrity right now is just the worst it's ever been. I mean, you can be a celebrity for having 8 children at the same time. You can be a celebrity for a sex tape. You know, it's just like the most empty thing right now. And I'm not like, that's definitely not the drive. You know, that's not what I'm aiming for. But at the same time, I would love for my music to be famous. I would love for the most people to know my music and to be inspired by my music. And so I realize that, you know, they kind of come hand in hand. You know, especially now with the internet and the scrutiny and the, you know, it's just kind of ridiculous.
The song.
Go ahead.
Well, let's let you continue the discussion in music. The song is Fame from Santa Gold's new record.
Just a little.
That is Santa Gold, my guest on Soundcheck. Fame is the name of the song from her her new album, which is called Master of My Make-Believe. Hustle make you high, hustle get you low. I don't want. Maybe just a little, though. So, you know.
Yeah, it's definitely ambivalent. It is, and it's saying, you know, we all, sometimes we think we're above it, you know, and then we're not.
Mm-hmm. Well, I do hope that you get your wish and that the music gets out there and that people enjoy it. The album is called Master of My Make-Believe. It's been 4 years in the making. It's out now. Santa Gold will be at MoMA on May 22nd, the annual party in the garden at the Museum of Modern Art. And then on June 23rd, the Governor's Ball, which this year is not on Governor's Island at all, but rather Randall's Island. So, couple of big gigs coming up. Santi, thank you very much for taking time and speaking with us on Soundcheck today.
Thank you so much. I'm glad to be here.
And that's going to do it for Soundcheck today. Tomorrow we'll conclude our Dance Craze series with a look at the popular dance moves of today, and we'll want to hear what you're up to on the dance floor. Plus a live performance from the band Shearwater. Their new album is called Animal Joy. That's tomorrow on Soundcheck. Our technical director is Irene Trudell. The program is produced by Katie Bishop and Greta Cohn with Marlon Cohn. Bah! Producer trickery. He's still Marlon Bishop and still no relation to anyone else on the staff. Our senior producer is Joel Meyer. We had help today from Amy Pearl and Gina Gildasis. I'm John Schaefer. Be with us tomorrow for another Soundcheck.